You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Welcome to the latest episode of Business Day Spotlight. My name is Lukanyo Mnyanda. I'm the editor of Business Day. Here with me is Genevieve Quintal, our newly appointed political editor, to give us a rundown on the big political stories of the week. Genevieve, so I suppose the way to start, we could start with the South African Institute of Race Relations' latest survey on voting intentions that came out on Wednesday. Some interesting findings, but one thing maybe I should try to clear for our readers. So, like, can you explain to us how the polling works? Because some people can confuse polling with predictions. So this is not a prediction. What is this, like, a poll telling us?
So no, and the IR makes this quite clear. These aren't predictions. This is a snapshot in time of how people are feeling. So they make phone calls, they ask certain questions, and it's done, I think this one was done from the 12th of February to the 26th of February, so it's done over a week or so. And it's just feelings at that time. This isn't an absolute prediction. This isn't like this is where the numbers are going to go. And I think that's very important to remember that when looking at these poll numbers.
So I shouldn't be looking at these numbers and trying to predict who's going to be the government or who's going to be in parliament come end of May or whenever the parliament opens after the elections.
It's a good indication of how people are feeling. And, you know, if you look at the numbers released yesterday, in December, the ANC, they were on 56% and they're now on 54.7%. So in those 3 months from December to now, their numbers have decreased, it seems. Mm. Well, it doesn't seem. That's what the poll is saying. But then there are a lot of things that have happened in the last 3 months. If we look, we came back after the December holiday to the state capture inquiry. We then had the Busasa allegations come out from Angelo Grizzi. And load shedding kicked in again in February. And the IRR actually says in their analysis that seems to be some of the issues that have plagued the ANC in these last few months that have seen their numbers come down.
Mm. Interesting, like, you mentioned the numbers. Because I remember when we had the last ones, I think it was Jesse Duarte from the ANC, who was not very impressed with the IRR, which is described as some kind of enemy and telling the voters, do not be like a fooled by this. They're trying to make you complacent so you don't vote for the ANC. So will she be pleased then to see these numbers that are showing a bit of a downward dip in ANC support?
She'll probably have the same response. Don't believe these. Don't be complacent. Or, oh, you see, now they're trying to make us seem low. Who knows? Mm. Look, parties do their own internal polling. They're not very open about what their own internal polling says. But yeah, I would say that, you know, someone like Jesse Dawes, even the ANC, would dismiss this in public. Whether they look at it more closely internally, well, that's another question.
Mm. And of course, outside of the ANC numbers, also see the DA number, which is actually a slight improvement from previously, but still below what they got in the previous election, assuming this would be the result. Mm. So how would this be viewed by Musi Maimane and his people?
The DA is still quite confident that they are going to grow. Look, Musi has to grow the party from what Helen had done. That was part of Helen's legacy, that she was able to grow the DA. And Musi's going to be in a lot of trouble if he doesn't actually manage to do that, even if it's by a few percentage points. But the DA has to grow. It's also having problems in its own stronghold, the Western Cape. Its numbers aren't looking as strong as it did in 2014. So as much as it wants to focus nationally, it has to also focus on the one place where it is governing, because those numbers aren't looking so great. Apparently, in towards the end of last year, I think it was in the hype of the issues with Patrice de Lille, their numbers in the Western Cape had actually fallen below the 50% mark. But it seems that from what I've heard, they back their own internal polling, they're back up to where they were in 2014. The IRR numbers also show that they're on the knife edge. According to the IRR poll numbers in the Western Cape, they are now on a 50.1%. Mm. They won the Western Cape with basically a 60% an outright majority in 2014. I don't think they're going to lose the province, but they've got a lot of work to do there.
And I suppose the same is true of the ANC in Gauteng, where we are.
Absolutely. It looks a little bit more dreary for the ANC in Gauteng. From the polling, neither the ANC or the DA are above the 50% mark, which that's been the whole question, whether anyone's going to win Gauteng outright or whether we're going to land up almost like with local government elections with a coalition government there. But then what coalition? That's the other question. The ANC is, according to the IR poll, is sitting on a 41.6%. The DA is sitting on 32.4%. Whether those go up, I'm not sure. The ANC in Gauteng has also had a lot of issues in terms of life esedimeni and the patients that died. And then the whole issue around when they allowed the MEC to come back onto the Gauteng PEC list. I think that has hurt them quite a bit. You know, there's still 2 months to go. A lot can happen in 2 months. The campaigns basically kick off properly now. So the IEC is the election timetable's coming out. Basically now political parties can put out radio ads and television ads, which apparently is the most successful when it comes to campaigning. So I think we're going to see the campaigning kicked up a notch now. The IRR says they will do another poll a week before the election, and then we can maybe get a better sense of whether the numbers are going up and down and what's happened in these 2 months of heavy campaigning.
So, Genevieve, in terms of like people who read Business Day, they probably look at these numbers and they're probably asking themselves, but what does it mean? Let's just assume all these numbers work out the way they are. The ANC gets up about, 54-55% nationally, or maybe slightly lower, slightly higher. The provinces are, especially the big ones, as like close as we say we are. What does this mean for in terms of the ANC's Ramaphosa's agenda? With this kind of numbers, do they leave him stronger? Do they leave him weaker? Can he push on his reform agenda, his new dawn?
So nationally, there's obviously not I don't see the ANC getting a 2/3 majority, which means when it comes to certain policies, the expropriation of land, changing the amending the constitution, I think, which is a big one that everyone's looking out for in the new administration, the ANC is going to need other political parties to vote on it to make such a changes. Especially an amendment to the constitution has to have a 2/3 majority. It doesn't give the ANC the absolute power, I guess, when it comes to policy decision, and they are going to have to work with certain parties. Myself and my colleague Claudie Malevich 2 weeks ago wrote for the Financial Mail regarding coalitions, and you know there's talk among some that maybe the ANC and the DA can work together. Cyril's ANC that's seen a little more central, policies are a little more palatable. Maybe it's not so leftist or part of that radical economic transformation faction, and the DA, who's also quite central, that some of their ideas are actually quite similar. If you look at their manifesto launches, they've got quite a few similarities with differences, obviously, but some similarities in terms of their policy.
I was actually going to ask that question, so you preempted me by answering it already, because I did read that article as well, which I thought was very good. My question came from me reading it. I mean, this is South Africa, after all, not Germany. Can you imagine a situation where our politics is that mature that the ANC and the DA would actually get together? But I can actually say, despite the similarities on a policy level, but then maybe on some level, do you think maybe people in the DA would think on land we might actually go the ANC? Because if the ANC doesn't go, if we don't, then they'll go the EFF, which is a much more to a radical place.
So the DA has been so set, and in their manifesto, we will not advocate for the changing of the constitution. Now, when you look at the DA and ANC manifestos on their idea of land reform, it's actually the same. People should own their own property. There should be people should have title deeds. State land that's lying fallow should be used for the public good, for housing, etc. The only difference is the ANC is saying change the constitution, DA is saying not. But the ANC in saying if you go read the manifesto and even the way Cyril Ramaphosa has been framing it, the way I understand it is literally to put a line in the constitution that just more clearly says certain land or state-owned land that is fallow or land for the public use may be expropriated. No one's coming after anyone's property. And that's very much in line with what the DA believes. But because the DA has been so strong and said, we will not, I don't know who backs down. Does the DA say, okay, we'll vote with you, just be, and if you say that you're only adding that line, Or do they say, well, no, we don't, even though we believe the same thing, we don't want to change, because they've promised their supporters that they won't advocate for the changing of the Constitution. And then on the other side, we have the EFF with a totally different idea of land expropriation. And they want to nationalize all land, which isn't in line with what the ANC wants or what the DA wants. So I think the land issue is not going to be sorted out very quickly. The DA has said they'll take the changing the Constitution matter to court. Whether it even gets through Parliament, because if no one is actually seeing eye to eye, I don't know how far the vote's even going to get.
There's no two-thirds majority one way or the other, is it?
Exactly.
Another one that's come up, when we have the governor of the Reserve Bank in Business Day today, once again talking about independence of the bank and flexibility in its policy making. I mean, on the one side, I think reading between the lines, I think the people were expecting him to be cutting interest rates anytime soon are most likely going to be disappointed, because it's quite clear that he doesn't think inflation is where it should be. But that's not really so much the point I wanted to raise with you. How big do you think the Reserve Bank will play a role in the debates around the elections? Because it's come up quite a bit, like from the ANC's manifesto, and is that debate been won or not? Or do you think that's still going to be a big factor?
I don't know if it's going to be a factor during these elections. It was literally a one line in the ANC manifesto. And that escalated only because we then, when you start asking questions about this, well, what does this mean? You had one side or faction saying, no, we're not going to interfere with the Reserve Bank or interfere with its mandate. And then another faction saying, oh, we need to change the mandate of the Reserve Bank. But what I think people don't understand, and what a lot of ANC members possibly don't understand, changing the mandate of the Reserve Bank or ownership of the Reserve Bank doesn't actually, it wouldn't do much, except that you've got to, we can't afford to do that, firstly. I think it was Enoch Godingwana.
Are you talking about the ownership?
The ownership, ownership. So let me put it this way. Changing the ownership and amending the Constitution are two different things. Changing the ownership, fine, change the ownership. Whether government can pay out those shareholders, we don't have the money in the fiscus to do that, but fine. If, say, they got it right, it's still governed by the Constitution. If you change the Constitution, that amend the Constitution of the Reserve Bank, that's where the issue comes. And they don't seem to be talking about changing the Constitution. They seem to be talking about ownership. And I think that we all need a better understanding of what the ANC was actually talking about and which side is, where are they actually going with the debate, and what actually can, how the Reserve Bank actually works.
I suppose, I mean on the ownership thing, you mentioned the cost. When you think of the country's other challenges, from housing to education, I mean, the numbers vary wildly how much this could cost, but it wouldn't be cheap. I think some people are talking about something going up to 100 billion or something. I can't actually remember what the actual numbers were. It's hard to see how just the country could justify it politically.
Because ownership isn't going to really change how the Reserve Bank runs if you're not changing the Constitution. So what would be the point? At this stage, the governor of the Reserve Bank, if I'm correct, is appointed by the president. The Reserve Bank is accountable to Parliament. So it's not like they're sitting out there in a silo by themselves and just making decisions and not having to account to anyone.
And so are the deputies, exactly. So and of course, like, the governor's term does end this year, and in November. Actually, one of the other deputies, Daniel Minnelli, his term is supposed to end halfway through the year, I think June, July. So if the government does want to influence how the central bank runs its policy, it can actually appoint people that
appoint someone who's more in line with their thinking.
With their thinking, exactly.
Absolutely.
Before we round up on this one, obviously we had some economic data today, which is probably slightly linked to this. I mean, I'm sure Cyril Ramaphosa won't like the headline that says, actually, you know what, after a year of Ramaphosa, we actually grew less than we did under Zuma's last year in office. I think Zuma's last year in office, we managed 1.3, and now we've got 0.8%. And, I mean, the NDP, it says we need to get growth around 2-5% to actually make any inroads into an unemployment crisis. So it looks like there's a lot of challenges ahead, but we can't get into that for now. But it was great having you here. And thank you for all your insights.
Thanks for coming.
And I'm sure we'll do it again very soon.
Absolutely. Yeah.